Daily Drive is brought to you by Outsell, your brand on AI. Supercharge your database. Bring more value and grow a loyal customer base through predictive marketing. Learn more at outsell.com.
I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News, and this is Daily Drive for Wednesday, January 20th. The last time we talked to Mark Fields on this podcast, the world was in a different but similar place. COVID was taking hold amid automotive shutdowns, plant closures, and suppliers were reeling, trying to understand their place in a reimagined auto industry. At the time, Mr. Fields, a longtime senior executive and former CEO of Ford Motor Company, was somewhat clairvoyant in predicting some of the issues the industry would battle over the coming weeks and months. Much of what he said last spring came true. More than half a year later, we check in with Mark again, this time to analyze the latest obstacles. The list of concerns in 2021 is filled with challenges. Worker absenteeism in plants, the issue of a labor shortage, and the pathway forward for several upstarts, including all of the new players in the industry. In this extensive interview, we talk EV adoption, Apple's entry into the automotive space again, and the favorite word of 2020 and 21, SPACs. We've reached TPG Capital Advisor Mark Fields in South Florida.
Well, it's always good to talk to Mark Fields. It's been a little while. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thank you.
I should restate, it's been a little while on this podcast because listeners will know that you and I talked back in March or April, but actually you and I just talked at our virtual CES. So thank you for joining me.
Oh, happy to be there. Appreciate you including me.
What's your lay of the land right now in the auto space? When you and I, Mark, talked back in the spring, I mean, COVID was really new in North America. You gave us a very interesting perspective, primarily on the supply base and some of your concerns. And it was very predictive in a way that there needed to be systems in place that allowed the supply base to be able to manufacture parts. Otherwise, we were going to be in a very dire situation. So we sit here now in early January. Let's recap. Where do you see the world, given your purview, both on the OEM side and on the supplier side?
Well, first off, I think I remember back in March, I mentioned that there's no one, another industry like the automotive industry that knows how to innovate and get themselves through tough periods of time. And I think the industry has distinguished themselves once again, both on the automaker side and the supplier side, in being able to handle COVID, to be able to keep their employees safe and healthy, but also at the same time bring back up this massive supply chain and manufacturing footprint. And they did so, I think, you know, much better than other industries did. And again, it gets to the capability of the individuals in this industry and the innovation and the passion that they have for it. So, you know, from that standpoint, I think consumers look at the auto industry as a real strength of this country. And in addition to some of the automakers, you know, switching and pivoting over to producing PPE, again, was another kind of feather in the cap of the industry, that this industry can always be relied on in tough times to work its way through and also contribute to solving whatever, you know, the world kind of brings at us. And so, you know, it's really heartening to see the industry coming through once again. As I think about where the industry sits right now, listen, we're coming off a year in which the industry was down about 14 or 15%. But at the same time, we're coming off a year where the consumer has been quite resilient. And as I look at the industry going into this year, you know, retail sales have been relatively strong. We've also started to see, at least in the last month or two of last year, fleet sales started to recover as businesses kind of get back on their feet. And as you look at 2021, I think for the most part, people are calling an industry of a little bit over 16 million units. So you'll see, you know, double digit growth there, which is good for the industry. But I think that's buttressed by a number of different things. One is continued low interest rate environment, which is very favorable for consumers. You still continue to see strong housing starts, which, as we know, that's so correlated with things like pickup sales. You're going to see, you know, during the year, the reduced COVID economic impact as the vaccine becomes more widely available. The new Biden administration has said they want to provide even more stimulus monies on top of what was enacted in December, which is going to be helpful for the consumer. And then finally, just these lingering changed buying behaviors due to COVID. I think I mentioned back in March that folks were going to look at a privately owned vehicle as almost a form of PPE. And I think that's still the case going forward. And I think that will be favorable for the industry. I think the biggest challenges that the industry faces this year is we know that inventory is low. It's probably about 25% lower than it usually is. And I think for the most part, definitely during the first 6 months, but you can see this potentially the whole year, the industry, you know, trying to restock and be able to do that while working through COVID and absenteeisms in the plants, or, you know, just availability of labor and things of that nature. And, you know, certain component parts, right? We're seeing a shortage of micro semiconductors in the industry right now. We may see other key parts or components experience that as the industry and the supply base works its way from COVID. So bottom line is I'm again very bullish on 2021, but it's going to be governed a bit by some of these other factors.
So two items that you just mentioned there that are really not talked about to a great extent. One is absenteeism in the supply base, and the other related but different is availability of labor. Can you expand on those two items? Because I don't know that this is being talked about in the way that it probably should be, given the impact that it could have.
Right. Well, when you look at absenteeism, whether you're an automaker or a supplier, usually absenteeism runs in a plant anywhere from maybe 5 to 10% on an ongoing basis. What you're seeing over the last few months I'm involved in a supplier that I'm a part owner in, but I also talk with a number of different suppliers. You're seeing absenteeisms double that, in some cases over 20%, as employees either get COVID or they live in a household where they don't want to expose a family member to COVID. So I think that's a big deal. And what you're seeing a number of the suppliers do, and even the OEMs, you're seeing them traditionally, they would carry more contract workers. What I'm seeing is suppliers and OEMs actually transfer those contract workers over to full-time workers because they need that buffer. Plus the fact when you bring a contract worker in, the churn is massive, right? Because these folks come in, they haven't maybe worked in a plant before. It's very hard work, physically taxing. And so, you know, they get a lot of churn in that base. So that's the first thing I'm seeing around that. And then, you know, on the issue of availability of labor, labor in the auto industry, particularly in the supply base, and many of the locations are in rural areas and not in, you know, major urban areas, you know, labor is not totally fluid. And so although you're seeing a lot of people out of work in the retail or the hospitality sectors, you've seen manufacturing hold up pretty well. And where those workers are not necessarily where locations are in the auto industry where we need labor. So labor's not fluid, and I think you're seeing a number of suppliers struggle with this, particularly if they have a plant maybe in a town, and they might be, if not the biggest employer, one of the larger ones. And just the availability of labor is a challenge, and that's why you're seeing it play out in some of the downtime we're seeing in some of the automakers' plants, as parts are challenged to get to the plant to be able to fulfill the production schedules.
It's an amazing phenomenon, availability of labor at a time when our unemployment rates are as high as they are.
Exactly. And it gets to this mismatch, right, of locations. And also, listen, it's hard work working in an automotive plant. Mm-hmm. It's different if you're working on a cruise ship or you're a waiter or a waitress at a restaurant, and no disrespect for that, that's hard work. But when you're getting in a plant and working 8 hours repetitively, it's physically and mentally taxing, and that's why it's not for everybody.
We'll hear more from Mark Fields after this message.
Outsell, your data-fueled, brain-powered brand on AI. Like a moon landing, technology takes us places we couldn't before imagine. And now, mind-reading technology for car dealers. That's Outsell, and it's one giant step into the future. Outsell harnesses the immense power of artificial intelligence, enabling you to have a continuous relationship with thousands of customers throughout the customer journey. In plain speak, Outsell is the first automated lifecycle marketing platform driven by AI. Outsell automatically builds and maintains a relationship with your customers using the most effective channels. When they need you, you're there, with information, an offer, the solution. Customers demand value. Outsell creates the kind of value prized by your best customers. A relationship that demonstrates your loyalty to them. Loyalty that creates retention. For hundreds of dealerships across the country, Outsell has replaced antiquated marketing efforts with AI-powered predictive marketing. Dealerships aren't adding another expense, they're eliminating what isn't working and replacing it with a superpower. It's time to talk with Outsell about automated lifecycle marketing platform driven by AI and how it will find, create, and nurture your current and future customers. It's time to outsell everyone. Learn more at outsell.com.
Mark, you mentioned a couple of other trends that you see going forward as we look at the next 12 to 18 months. You mentioned them to me during our CES broadcast. One of them, electrification, which I want to get into, and also the joint development trends that are occurring between OEMs and Tier 1 suppliers. Actually, the two trends could be somewhat interlinked given the rapid pace of technology and the supply base. But let's focus on electrification. We've got a lot of models coming. You have been part of the development of those models that we're going to start to see here. Where do you see the consumer landing here? Where do sales go on electric vehicles? Because every dealer who we talk to in the country says, I don't know if anybody's going to buy them.
Well, you're exactly right. 2021 is the year that a lot of the products show up in the marketplace. The question now is, you know, will the consumer? And I'm a big believer in 2021, we're going to start to see, I think, a significant growth in battery electric vehicles or full electrified vehicles for a couple of reasons. When you look across the world, when you see major upticks in sales, it's really driven around two things. One is the regulatory pressure, and the second is incentives from the government. And I think here in the U.S., I was just talking about here in the U.S., I think when the new Biden administration that's coming in, they've said very clearly their priority is in improving the fleet and the penetration of electric vehicles here in the U.S., plus their focus on the environment. So I think you're going to see fairly quick action in the Congress around more incentives, and that will make it more compelling for consumers to purchase an electric vehicle, because when you look at the hurdles for electric vehicle adoption, it's really three things. It's cost versus an internal combustion engine, so incentives will help that. Second is the availability of charging, so consumers don't have to fear that they won't be able to charge their vehicle. And I think this year you've seen a number of private and also public and private announcements around building out the infrastructure starting this year. And then the third is really the convenience factor, the charging time. And you're seeing a number of announcements of improved battery technologies and charging times that are going to wind their way into the marketplace. So I think for all those reasons, you're going to see a significant increase in EVs. And then finally, I call it the neighbor effect, right? When you think about Tesla, you know, they had the market to themselves. They now have competition. And it's really been about early adopters. And when your neighbor, let's say, you know, you live on Main Street and your next door neighbor now buys an electric vehicle because we're going to more mass adoption, all of a sudden that gives you permission to say, oh, well, I guess this thing isn't as exotic or strange as people make it out to be. And they must be comfortable.
Yeah, it's validation. Right?
You know, yeah, it's validation. And I think that factor is really going to play another element here, which is going to juice a lot of electric vehicle sales this year and beyond.
And somewhat related, we've seen some significant partnerships, Magna and LG, just recently. You say that there's going to be an acceleration in terms of the propensity of partnerships because, you know, the cost of entry is just so high.
Yeah, I believe you're going to see many more announcements around this for a couple of reasons. One is when you look at electrification and you look at autonomous, and particularly autonomous technology, you know, the revenue for those for your product or service is still a number of years away. Nevertheless, the first dollar of profitability. So I think every boardroom is asking their CEOs and their executive teams, hey, how are you going to be able to afford this and for us to be able to make an appropriate return? And therefore, that's why I think out of necessity, not only from a aspect of pooling monetary and financial resources, but around pooling talent. We know in the industry, this is a big issue, right? Being able to get the talent to develop autonomous and electrification products and services. And if you can pool that talent with a partner, that's a good thing. And then I think the other thing is when you're partnering up with somebody, it's the aspect of setting standards. And if you're partnering with somebody who's very strong in the industry or with a product and service, if you're a tier one supplier, that says, hey, I have a better chance of maybe being one of the standards kind of going forward. So I think that's one of the major reasons. And one of the probably the second major reasons you'll see more of these is you have a number of new CEOs that have taken the wheel at a number of tier one suppliers, and they're going to want to put their strategy and their stamp on the company. And they're probably looking at all their businesses and saying, does this position my business for growth based on the way I view the world and the way it's going to look like in the next, you know, 5 years plus or minus? And I think you'll see them, you know, making some decisive decisions around positioning their portfolio, their products and services to allow them to get them the best chance to grow going forward.
One final topic, the latest news here right around the break was around another company positioning its products going forward, and it was Apple once again, right, you know, interested in the auto business. What's your view on that?
Well, listen, where there's smoke, there's fire. So obviously they have a number of people working on this. You know, at the surface, you know, Apple getting into the auto business seems like a big stretch. But if you dig a bit deeper, they do bring some huge assets to something like this, namely software and battery expertise, along with an extremely strong and well-known brand. And if you think of Tesla, you know, at their core, they've been successful due to their basically they're a software company, their battery expertise, and they've taken the approach of full integration, which has been a problem for them in terms of manufacturing their products with quality. And, you know, they've been the recognized leader in battery software management and battery technology. You know, that being said, you know, there's new battery technology coming down the pike that could, you know, take away Tesla's advantage. And, you know, it was rumored that Apple is working on new types of technology that allows for maybe cheaper, safer, more powerful ability to hold the charge and charge it faster. So listen, I don't believe the timeline that was rumored, the 2024 timeline, because they, you know, to be able to put a vehicle out in that time frame, it's just not realistic. It could be, you know, a couple of years after that. But if even if it is, they would clearly need to take the route of working with a partner to contract manufacture the vehicle. And if you think about what they're really good at in terms of the additional things I mentioned, they're really good at managing their supply chain because, you know, whether it's Foxconn or others, they're actually making the products for Apple on a contract manufacturing basis. So, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, parlor games here, whether they're going to come out with a full vehicle or just maybe a platform, a software platform. But as we know, designing, engineering, building, you know, marketing and servicing an automobile is a lot more complex than a cell phone. But if they're intelligent in picking good partners for certain elements, you know, it could be viable and successful, but it's not for the faint of heart.
One final thing, actually. Tesla has what Elon Musk done impressed you?
Well, listen, it has. I mean, he's the first guy in how many generations that's been able to, you know, start up a new car company and make it a significant presence in the market, in the automotive industry. His challenge is, listen, Tesla makes their money just on selling regulatory credits. They do it on the regulatory arbitrage. They absolutely have to figure out a way how they're making true profit on the designing, manufacturing, and selling of vehicles. And, you know, that's a challenge because, you know, if you think about it, he's had the market to himself. The competitors are showing up now. And he has basically said that, you know, their problem is not demand, but it's affordability. And if you think about those two things, first off, on the demand side, it could start to be a problem because, you know, now there's competition in the neighborhood. And on the affordability side, you know, the biggest cost, obviously, in an electric vehicle is the batteries and the battery packs. It's probably up to about a third of the cost of a vehicle versus maybe 10 or 12% for an internal combustion engine. And economies of scale really don't help when raw materials are some of the biggest costs around batteries. So their key to, again, getting profitability in the base automotive business is they have to continue to innovate on the battery side and get that cost per kilowatt hour down. But listen, stepping back and seeing the impact he's had on the business, and then ultimately looking at how capital markets view, you know, their business, and, you know, it's kind of interesting. Their market cap is, you know, I think higher than the top 10 automakers that sell 50 million vehicles right. a year around the world. And, you know, they sell 500,000. So there you go.
And his estimated net worth on about January 7th was nearly $200 billion.
Yeah. He's what do they say? More money, more problems, right?
That's right. Well, I've got no problem talking to you. Thank you so much, Mark. I really appreciate your insight and appreciate you rejoining the show and also joining our first CES event, which aired last week.
Great. Great to talk to you, Jason.
Thank you so much, Mark.
We've reached Mark Fields in South Florida, and that's Daily Drive for Wednesday, January 20th. For breaking news, go to autonews.com, and for a library of more than 200 interviews, go to autonews.com/dailydrive. We'll be back Thursday.